Oh, 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 O'Reilly!
Are your wiper blades chattering, skipping, or squeaking? Don't let streaks or smearing on your windshield compromise your visibility. When it's time to replace your wiper blades, stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts and see our selection. Our professional parts people will even install your new wiper blades while you wait. Stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts today.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
There's nothing like snook hook sets at dawn or catching a tarpon in the moonlight. Find your next fishing trip made easy on fishingbooker.com and experience the magic of the Sunshine State or any other destination on your fishing bucket list. Book a blue water adventure in search of sailfish or go snapper fishing with the kids. With over 6,000 captains and trips to choose from, planning your next one just got a whole lot easier. Download the Fishing Booker app on the Google Play or App Store, or visit them online at fishingbooker.com to book your trip today.
This episode is brought to you by Navy Federal Credit Union. At Navy Federal, it's been the mission to help the military community for over 90 years, and not just help them, but do everything to make sure they not only grow, but flourish. That's why Navy Federal Credit Union has all kinds of great savings and investment options, like share certificates with sky-high rates. So don't hesitate. Start growing your finances today with a variety of savings and investment options. Navy Federal Credit Union. Our members are the mission. Savings products insured by NCUA. Investment products are not insured. Not obligations of Navy Federal and may lose value.
Hey, I'm KC.
And I'm Tyler.
And you're listening to
The Element Podcast.
What is happening, y'all? We are on an expedition.
Expediting.
We are finding things and looking for things, and things are happening. Tyler, can we even tell people what we're about to do right
now? Yeah, we're going metal detecting in the hill country of Texas.
Man, that's cool.
Yep.
I'm about to detect some metal broadheads in the sides of some things, I think, is what I'm planning on doing.
Yeah, I'm excited about it, man. I got some new arrows. Our friend Isaac sent us some new arrows that are... They're mean and green, dude. They're awesome. I can't wait to shoot something with them.
I'm just going with my classics still. I didn't adopt the new colors yet, but I will soon. I just have some more to lose before I get to that point.
Yeah.
But we're going to roll into this quick, guys. We did a Q&A a little while back on Instagram, and y'all had a bunch of questions for us.
Mainly just the Q, though.
Yeah. We're going to give the answers today. I was going to say we're going to give the A, but that could be a little misconstrued to a lot of different things. So just to avoid the confusion for y'all, we're going to give you the answers to the questions that you had for us. So we don't have a ton of time because we're on the road about to go on a hunt. So we're just going to get into this thing, do this thing kind of rapid fire style, try to give you as much information, as much knowledge as we can maybe share as we can, as quickly as we can. So, Tyler.
Yeah.
This is on the topic of the buck truck.
Oh.
Best and worst parts of the buck truck.
All of them.
I suppose this applies to the series, but I would probably apply it to the truck itself. The worst part of the buck truck is the size of the back seat.
Yep.
That is the worst part of the buck truck.
Yeah, I think it is for sure.
Now, that is spoken from the guy who's the driver all the time, so that's actually kind of nice. But I've heard secondhand that the back seat size is pretty bad about the buck truck.
Yeah. So if you're a person who wants to give us a truck with a big back seat, we wouldn't be opposed.
Need a big bed, too, though. So, like, you got to have kind of both of those, you know?
I'd say best part of the buck truck is
Kudu.
Oh man, what a toad. Creepy.
Texas is crazy, man.
It is, man. I saw a tiger earlier just prowling the plains. I don't know what the worst part physically of the buck truck is, but I can tell you what probably the worst part of the buck truck, man, there's a couple of bad parts of the buck truck. I guess you call it figuratively, or however you want to say it,
spiritually.
Yeah, the buck truck, some of the obstacles are the fact that we pretty much hunted together. It was kind of like part of the challenge of the buck truck was that we would hunt together wherever we went. So, like, if somebody tagged out, then you get to twiddle your thumbs till the other dude tags out, kind of. So that happened in Kansas for me, and it also kind of happened in South Dakota a little bit.
It happened for me in Oklahoma a little bit, too.
Yeah.
And we ended up leaving kind of early on that because of a couple different circumstances.
Because we decided real quick that what you did was about the only place we could find that happening.
It was an anomaly at that moment.
Yeah.
I would say, too, kind of to echo that, but just on a production side, it would seem that, like, matching everything up.
Oh my gosh,
is tough.
The editing. Yeah. That was my next point. So, which all goes hand in hand is like matching things up, editing the whole thing. It's a literal 6-hour disaster every time I, you know, get on the.
If you're
any one of those
wondering what the Buck Truck is, maybe you haven't tuned into what we do too much, or you're kind of new to us. I'm KC, and that's Tyler, like we said in the intro. Mm-hmm. And then we have a crew of guys, Eric, Greg, and Michael, and a bunch of other friends that join us to do stuff as well. And we, this fall, filmed a series called Buck Truck that will be out on the Meat Eater YouTube channel sometime this summer or fall. And so we are referring to that series, but that series... metaphorically also applies to the Buck Truck, which is a white Chevy pickup with a camper on top of it. So that's where it kind of came from. So, you know, the best part of that truck, I think, is having a camper topper. Mm. If you don't have a camper topper or a cab, as some of our friends with more northern latitudes call them.
oh, gosh.
They, it's a real handy tool as a hunter. Now, the best part of the series Buck Truck, I think really I enjoyed that it gave us direction. Like a lot of times the way we do stuff is we fly by the seat of our pants and we just go crazy all fall, and it's a ton of fun. But the Buck Truck almost took the lightning in the bottle that we have and gave it a little bit of a funnel to direct one way or another. And that was actually kind of handy, I feel like, and kind of made us or allowed us to do some really, really cool stuff.
Yep. We're never getting done with this thing.
The podcast or the...
The podcast, yeah.
We got some construction up ahead. Any other good things to say about the Buck Truck?
No, nothing good about it. it was really fun, I'll say that. Yeah,
we killed a lot of big deer. And,
yeah, and that's one thing I guess I will say, if we're going to go on about it. The thing that you and I did a lot when we first started the Element was we hunted together a bunch.
Yeah.
And in 2020 and 21, we didn't... We spent a lot of time, you know, doing the thing where we're in camp and then somebody tags out and go to the next state or do something, you know, wherever you're going next or whatever. Whatever's best. And so I'd say it was kind of nice to just hunt together all year pretty much.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun, man. All right. Is Buck Truck coming back next year or is it retiring?
It seems that it's not really retiring. The whole concept is what we do. Nothing we really do is to put on, you know what I mean? Like everything that we film or you see on video is us doing what we pretty much normally do. So, that's the beauty of being able to do YouTube stuff is you get to do what you do, you know, and you don't have to put on like a Hollywood, you know, movie or TV or whatever. So I would say the concepts overall are still there. The things that we've always done are still there. The Buck Truck is just a continuation of what we did from 16 to 21. It just happened in 22. And it's going to continue on. But as far as like being called the Buck Truck, I don't think it'll be like a series or anything. It'll just be like, I'm guessing it probably won't be, but it'll probably be more just like, the Buck Truck informal, you know, and you'll see videos go out on Element and probably Meat Eater YouTube channel stuff from it.
Yeah, to quote the infamous sitcom character Chandler Bing, let's don't talk about what we don't do. Let's talk about what we do-do.
Do-do.
As they say. So, did you see any exotics on Texas public land? We have seen exotics on public land before in Texas.
Mm-hmm.
Do you locate bucks in a sea of beautyberry? Oh, how do you? Man, Tyler, you hate beautyberry. Tell me more.
Okay. Quickly. I think beautyberry... doesn't provide any cover unless it has leaves on it. I don't feel like they eat beautyberry a whole lot. They browse it some, I think, but I think they're not really worried about the berry as much as they are like browsing the soft, you know, woody stuff. And I would say if you're hunting to see a beautyberry, you might not be in the right habitat. But if you were, you know, if you were stuck to that, and you had to, I would say look for landmark trees potentially, depending on how much beautyberry. Usually that stuff grows in the shade, so you're probably not going to find too much landmark. But if you can find something like a big oak, like a monster, there may not just be a landmark tree, but it may be more of an acorn, you know, food source or whatever. And then outside of that, man, just kind of got to take the whole thing as a whole. I think I need a little more context to help me with that.
Probably. I would say topographical features, maybe water. And if you have a sea of something, you need to pay attention to what's around that sea, because that means that you know, every ocean has its boundaries, right? It has beaches. And
placed there by God.
Yeah, that's right, man. So if you have a sea of beautyberry, maybe it's even, you know, you might be talking public, private, I don't really know, but the stuff around it is going to matter if what you have is monotonous. So if you might have to just glass because it's on a piece of property you don't have access to, but if you can see, you know, if we're talking beautyberry, we're talking October usually, so persimmons might be a thing. You can see some persimmons, you can see some water sources, you can see a deer feeder, whatever it might be. Keep that in mind, because I think a lot of times we don't look at things holistically enough, and we think about things property by property, and deer are using a whole landscape.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what this is context to, but it says new spot. This is the next question. This is good. New spot. Do you try to find a tree to hang from in the dark or wait until sunup?
You asking me?
I've done them both, and I can't tell you which is the right thing to do.
Yeah. I like, if I'm going to try to hunt somewhere and it's new in the morning, I would rather find a tree in the dark, because you can tell real quick if you should be somewhere else, and it doesn't take long to break down. It takes a little bit longer to set up. So, you know, breaking down is nothing. Mm. So I like to do it in the dark. I like to get in there early, and then I just kind of take my time. I shine the trees. I try to I'll walk out, you know, 10 yards and make sure that the lanes are what I thought they were and everything. We don't really use red lights too often. Neither one of us, I think.
No.
You know, I'm not afraid to just blast that pretty bright white light up into a tree and make sure I have my lanes. And we've done it so much that we can kind of see that stuff pretty well, I think. Mm-hmm. We've gotten better at seeing it. So I'm not afraid to do it anymore. It was definitely a pain in 17, 18, probably 19 even. It was like one of those things that I really dreaded doing. I don't dread it as much anymore, but I definitely would prefer to hunt either the ground or, a place that I've been in the morning if I'm going in new.
I'm getting a little bit more to the point where I'm not afraid to hold off and hang, because I've found that on public ground often, it's not always, but often you aren't seeing that, like, crack of daylight movement as much. Now, you might, depending on where you're at and all that.
How often are you there, crack of daylight, though?
From time to time. I do think that, like, for instance, I'm thinking of a place that Greg and I hunted this year. We got there in really good time in the morning, got hung in the tree, and then ended up we were really emphasizing, like, fresh tracks on trails on this place. And as it got daylight, I realized, like, there were no trails right where we were. And that was kind of a disheartening thing. Didn't see a single deer, and got down at, like, 8:30 because it was bad. So if we would have been stayed on the ground and kind of made an assessment, then it would have changed. However, I still side with you most of the time on, I'll just go ahead and find a tree to hang in. And I also feel as if our strategy of not getting super high in a tree actually helps with this. Because the higher you are in a tree, the less distance you have for shots, and you can't see as good. So if you only hang, 10 to 15 foot up, as long as you have enough cover to hunt effectively, you can see maybe deer that are off at 60 yards. Maybe you're off a little bit on your tree choice. Or you can still shoot out to 35 because you haven't, like, canopied yourself up in the top of the tree.
That's a good point.
How does Texas public work? Seems like everything is a draw hunt.
You can go ahead.
There's a lot of draw hunts. There's a lot of walk-in stuff. It is done property by property. I'll give you that much. It's not units. So the Texas Parks and Wildlife website's a little confusing. Onyx will help you find the stuff. So that's a good starting point without trying to you know, to be respectful of other public land hunters, don't want to highlight stuff too much.
I didn't know that you did that. I didn't know you were respectful of other people.
I am, but more in a, like, a realistic sense as opposed to, like, the self-righteous sense. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I got you.
So this is the one that I didn't quite understand the context. Maybe you'll have a better idea. You were on a fence crossing. What was the secondary feature? Do you know what that's?
We're on a fence crossing. This would have been probably somewhere where somebody was successful. It might have been, man.
I felt like it probably related to the picture that you used with the question.
Yeah, maybe. I would think if I don't know, I can't. I don't know if I can answer that in a. Without sitting here and having some awkward silence.
Okay, let's,
and forever, but
let's take it a different direction.
I can ask different, or I can answer about what different things you might pair up with.
Let's talk about, pairing up multiple features to make you more successful.
Yeah, so for instance, if you're talking about a fence crossing, one thing that you might find on a fence crossing is a plum thicket 120 yards away, which is a place that a deer often beds. You know, a plum thicket would be a place that deer in certain country often bed.
Uh-huh.
Look at those black bucks.
Yep, just living.
LIVIN. in any sense, if you're just hunting one feature, you're probably not going to have not as much confidence as you should have, maybe. So I like to have the more features that I can feel like are giving me an edge, the better I feel about a spot. And so, like, for instance, if I'm hunting bed to feed, I like to be like a half mile or so from feed, especially like early season if it's hot, to give yourself a good chance of being in, you know, seeing a deer in daylight, a buck or whatever. Mm-hmm. So, and then, you know, knowing that there's bedding somewhere on the other side of you really gets you to feeling pretty good. So, I mean, things like that, you can also take like oak trees, for instance, you know, and one oak tree might have three scrapes around it, and you haven't seen a scrape on any of the oak trees, but all the oak trees have acorns. Well, maybe the scrape oak tree is where you want to be. Like, if they're all feeding the deer, then let's go where the one is that has a bunch of deer scent at it or whatever, you know? So, any other ideas you got?
I just like to add as many good things that as I can to my setup. So, a lot of times I'm trying to match three things up, whether it's food source, trail, pinch point. You know, that's really the formula. Oftentimes is food source, trail, and a pinch of some sort, or boundary or something.
The pinch is because we bow hunt mostly.
Yeah, exactly. And you can apply that to rifle too. Just expand your ranges a little bit. You know, like if you're rifle hunting and you have a 200 yard pinch, it still counts for you.
Sure.
You know, but, you know, in archery, like if you can find a spot where the terrain or a field edge pinches something down to 50 yards, like you are in the chips, man. Mm-hmm. It's good stuff. Mm-hmm. Good thoughts there. Thoughts on deer hunting in Arkansas. Just like every state, I feel like Arkansas is the South. So let's just take southern states. There's some good hunting and there's some bad hunting.
Yeah.
A lot of the good hunting is done on private ground. A lot of big deer get killed on private ground. There are some big deer on public ground, but you got to work hard for them.
How do you feel when somebody from up north goes, man, y'all live in Texas, y'all must have awesome deer hunting right there?
Man, right there is the really problem with that. Right now, the distance we're driving to go, we're going to good whitetail country where we're going to access hunt. And in this distance, we could also drive to the Midwest and shoot 250-pound deer from our hometown.
Yeah.
So, Texas is huge, and there is some good hunting and some bad hunting and some just non-existent hunting in Texas. In fact, Tyler talks about this a lot, but you go to, like, Dallas-Fort Worth area, it's like a wildlife desert, you know.
Yeah.
It's just because there's no hunting for, you know,
so, I mean,
miles and miles.
If you walk out your back door, you should be able to rattle bucks in, because that's what I've seen on TV.
Man,
right?
I have never rattled a buck in my life on my property.
I mean, that's – and so it's just so different, right? So same thing with Arkansas. It's like there's some places I think you could kill some nice bucks, but overall, like, it's all going to be different. It's a great state. It's the natural state, so it's got a lot of cool natural features, like the Washita Mountains, the Mississippi River bottoms. It's got, you know, classic Midwest type stuff. So there's different stuff you can kind of hunt. I think overall, it's definitely not Illinois. It's not, you know, Missouri, Iowa, but We've had fun, and it's right out our back door, so you know, that's kind of the reason we've gone there.
That was the big point I'd finish with, is that I wouldn't call it a destination state, but because it's close to home, it's another nice state to be able to go hunt in.
For sure.
How would you rate the hunting pressure based on other places you hunt? I guess that's referencing Arkansas again.
I think overall there's a lot throughout the season.
Yeah, I think it's high.
Yeah.
Because Arkansas has a pretty nice gun season.
And a long bow season.
Uh-huh. And muzzleloader season and all kinds of stuff. And tons of access and a decent amount of people and not a ton of public ground. So
lots of tags.
Yeah, lots of deer tags.
So
and a long season, too. Like, it goes way into the new year.
Yeah.
So it's probably pretty similar to Texas or Louisiana or some of the other southern states, I would say, pressure-wise.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Have you looked into hunting the Ozarks?
We have.
We have. How do you feel about hunting the Ozarks, Tyler?
I think it's something that I would love to do, and that's, you know, potentially – I mean, I've hunted Arkansas for a long time, so I've hunted different types of habitats and that kind of thing. So – without giving too much information, I guess, the Ouachitas, those kind of hills are pretty fun.
Yeah.
I'll just say that.
Sounds hard. Biggest challenge to ground hunting, big river bottoms and swamps. I would say the openness of those things. Like we both did a decent amount of ground hunting in those situations this year. And getting deer within bow range was difficult. Seeing them wasn't like...
What was the question? Ground hunting swamps?
River bottoms and swamps.
Oh.
Yeah. So a lot of times in river bottoms and swamps, if you're unfamiliar with this type of habitat, in the south, the rivers kind of spread out and get slow, and they flood and all this kind of stuff, and it makes for a high canopy, no understory type habitat that the deer and stuff still live in, and they find these little pockets of habitat to be in, but it makes it where it's really open. Like, there's not a lot of stem count. You can see a long ways. So seeing a deer isn't hard, but getting them within bow range is pretty difficult sometimes.
Yeah, there's also this thing where, like, even if you're not in the swamps and stuff, or big oak trees can rain down enough leaves that it keeps the understory down pretty good a lot of times, and enough shade and stuff. So, you know, like, for instance, I was kind of above, you know, floodplain, I guess, where I ended up shooting a doe this year, but I mean, it's just that time of year, December, it's wide open, you know? And so I was very blessed to get a shot at that doe with as many eyes as were in there and everything.
Are elk blind compared to deer?
If you watch Spiked Out, you probably would say no.
I feel like they aren't. I feel like a cow elk's really good at picking you off. I think that bulls are in a heightened state of rut even more than whitetails are whenever it's the rut. So, like, they are constantly trying to figure out if you're something they want to chase off or chase. Mm-hmm. So that's why they kind of stand around sometimes. But
yeah,
elk are not dumb or have bad senses. Any fishing rods in the buck boat? There really haven't been.
I don't know if there has either.
But there will be.
Yeah, there will for sure, for sure.
How do you navigate the swamps after dark? I'm guessing that means on foot. More than it does in the boat. In the boat, we had these big old lights that kind of worked.
We're going to have bigger ones next year.
Yeah, we're going to have a little bit better system next year, I think. This is the learning curve year for the buck boat. Onyx is huge on that stuff. One of the things that I like to do is use my tracker on the way in or out, depending when it is daylight. That way, when it's dark, you can just look at your map a little bit more and follow that line as opposed to having to, you know, kind of navigate with a headlamp or whatever.
Yeah, I would say it's a good thing. You know, sometimes you're going to have to backtrack when you're trying to access or leave the swamps. And that's what – one night we almost had to with Clay and everybody.
Oh, my gosh. So we had the whole crew.
Yeah, we were, like, to the tops of the boots. And I felt like we went through about 400 yards of swamp.
That was
weird. It was supposed to be, like, 80. I don't know.
You know
how
it is at night, dude. Things seem so much further.
Yeah.
So how would you rate the buck boat on the fun scale? Dude,
I mean,
I'm 11 out of 10.
I was thinking 9 to 10 for sure. You know, the one thing that I didn't like about the duck boat is you get out in the duck boat on a day that's like, oh, it's 30% chance of rain, and it starts raining, you are toast.
You're cold. Yeah,
you're
and in
get
general,
wet.
The coldness of it is bad. But you know, a little preparation on the clothing front kind of helps with that.
I put a lot of clothes. I felt pretty good. I never really got too cold in the boat. It's just the rain was, like, not my favorite.
That First Light windproof stuff works pretty good. Yeah. And y'all wore some of those. Eric stole my waterproof stuff and wore that.
Yeah,
so.
The Omen is pretty bad to the bone.
Yeah,
I did not get wet ever when I had that stuff on.
How old is the boat motor? That boat motor is 2004, I think. Might be older than that. I don't remember, but
about Michael's age.
I mean, it seems new to me because it was the new one my granddad bought. But if you know much about boat motors, and I don't really, but I do know that those Yamaha 90s are just beasts, man. Mm-hmm. They are just hammer time. Which mechanicals do you prefer?
All of them.
All of them. Three blades.
I prefer big three blades. Yep. Mm-hmm. I would say, typically, front deploy is what I've used.
Yeah, I like the mechanics of a rear deploy better, but it's hard to get an effective three blade. So I think if you're shooting enough momentum, kinetic energy, actually, let's just say kinetic energy, not to confuse people, then you're doing good at that. It's interesting to see. So Tyler shoots a faster shooting bow than I do, or not. His setup's faster. Mm-hmm. We shoot the same bow now. But if you look at the holes on the deer, your entry holes will be smaller than mine because your arrow's zipping through there faster and they don't have time to open up as much. It's not like they're tiny, you know, but I have noticed that. It's kind of neat.
Yeah.
So same question, pretty much best broadhead for whitetail. It's going to be pretty, subjective, you know,
yes,
depending on who you are and what you shoot. If you're shooting a high-energy setup, then a three-blade mechanical that is well-made, let me emphasize the well-made part, is hard to beat, in my opinion.
Yeah, I'm with you. I mean, it depends on who you are, what you're shooting, where you're going to aim.
Yeah.
I mean, if you would rather crowd the shoulder, maybe not, but I don't know. Even if you want to crowd the shoulder, just shoot them quartering away, and that broadhead's going to be awesome.
Elk Guide wants me to shoot fixed, QAD Exodus or Iron Will.
I'll say this. I've shot both at a target, never shot either at an animal, and I would say QAD probably.
I'll throw our buddy Isaac a plug in here too. The Vector broadheads are pretty sweet. I've shot them quite a bit and they fly really well.
Yeah.
Couldn't really go wrong with any of those choices though.
I don't think so either. The QAD, I just like QAD because of the three blade aspect. Mm-hmm. That's the main reason I like it.
Yeah. I think too, make sure you practice and that you're pretty efficient if you're not used to shooting them, because like bow torque is real, man.
Yeah.
And you need to make sure and understand what bow torque does to the fly of an arrow and how that is affected.
If I was shooting a dadgum two blade on the Neil guy,
yeah,
dude, it wouldn't even come close, dude.
Probably right, man.
Gosh, I was so leaned over, man.
Another thing too is that if you aren't used to shooting a fixed, I would look at the swept blade Exodus or the vented version of the Iron Will, because that will help you when it comes to arrow flight.
Good tips.
And whoever's screaming at me about learn to bow, well, not everybody has time or can do that or is effective, man.
That's so right. If you're a blue collar worker, man, you might not have time.
That's right. Gear and camo. I guess this is more of a topic.
Camo.
Okay. Is First Light as good as Sitka? It's hard to match things up piece for piece. I'll tell you, I like them both. We use First Light a lot now and like the guys over there at First Light, and I can't complain about it, man.
Yeah.
If you choose the other brand, that's cool too. I got some friends over there as well. I will tell you this. Where I think First Light edges out Sitka is that the whitetail pattern can be worn on the ground, and I think that's the big difference.
Yeah, that's a good point, you know, and it looks good. That's the thing I noticed. There was a lot of scenarios where it looks good, and I'm not trying to be the guy to advocate for wearing the same camo and working everywhere.
Yeah.
But I'm telling you, this in Arkansas, it looked awesome.
Yeah, it looked awesome. It also looked South Texas.
Yeah, it looked good in South Texas. It looked good in Oklahoma,
mm-hmm,
because there were cedars around, you know, and you get some of those greens and stuff. Man, it looked good. So I think it does translate pretty well. When the pattern first came out a couple of years ago, I was like, you know, like anything, it takes some getting used to, like a lot of things at least. And I was like, oh, it kind of looks weird, you know. I didn't think it wouldn't work. I just thought it looked weird. Well, I can tell you after wearing it this year especially that I think it matches up with a lot of cool stuff out there that we hunt.
How to hunt in cold, snow, crunchy snow. I don't have a lot of experience with this. Just a little bit. Tyler, you have a little bit more experience.
Get in a tree.
Yeah.
You know, go in early, let the woods calm down, get in a tree, and listen.
Yeah. I would say this is just to send you maybe to one of our friends, Alex Comstock, who's a guy who you might know, Whitetail DNA. He spends a lot of time. He's from Minnesota, so real cold and crunchy where he's at.
Yeah.
He's got a real cool video where he shoots a deer from like a igloo looking thing. So maybe some tips there.
Yeah, he'd help you out for sure.
Because we get cold when it's 32.
Yep.
Struggling to find the scrape. Where can I find community scrapes?
You do kind of what we were talking about earlier, and you match up as many variables as possible in terrain or habitat features. Mm-hmm. And then you go check 100 of those, and maybe one or two might be, depending on where you're at, right? Where you're at in the nation. But, I mean, you're in Illinois, you might find a few more. You're in, Arkansas, you might find a few less, whatever. But I think overall, like, when you can find features that drive deer into a great trail, that's a place. So you take a great trail and walk it out, and all of a sudden you come across a fence crossing or another ditch that makes an X mark the spot kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
That's where you might find this stuff. And you also, you know, another thing, if you think about our scrape on Texas Public that we really like, that we saw some stuff happen at this year, and you think about the one that I shot the deer off of in 2020 in Illinois. Both those trees were kind of weird trees that had like one branch on them. Mm-hmm. They were kind of small and had one branch that hung over at just the right height.
Yeah.
So something to think about as far as finding these scrape. Now, if you find a good tree like a scrub oak or something that's got low branches that go out all sides of it, you might find three scrapes, and they might not all be that – none of them may be big, but that's still a hub. That's still – it may not look like the scrape that's the size of the car hood that Mark Drury talks about, but – that is a hub. That whole tree is a hub because it's got multiple scrapes on it, and that means deer coming in from multiple directions.
I also would say if you are in a spot that looks awesome and you can't find the scrape and you're pretty sure it's not there, put it there.
There you go.
It works, man.
Yeah.
I mean, we've, especially in Texas, we've done pretty well with some mock scrapes. I don't know if it works around the country. I know other people make it work, but it's worth trying. For sure.
Mm-hmm.
What info do rubs give you, and how do you use it at different times of the year? So I've talked some this season about paying more attention to rubs, because I used to just kind of write them off because I was just like, oh, well, just rubs are everywhere. And that's sort of true later in the season. But really, you know, up until like middle of the rut, seeing rubs can actually make a difference as far as where you think deer are and when they're spending time. Like, I'll go in places where it's kind of like that hill country type stuff or whatever, and there'll be a drainage here that doesn't have any, and then you go over one drainage and there's rubs all up and down that thing, and you know that at least, excuse me guys, the cough is real, it's that time of year. You know that at least in a 24-hour period, there's a deer spending some time in there. Now, finding them in daylight, that gets weird, and that's another thing you still have to kind of work on with the rub thing, because, you know, if you find a rub out in a clearing in a place that just a deer probably wouldn't feel comfortable when the sun's high, he's probably not out there in the daylight, you know. But if you find a decent concentration of rubs back in cover, there's a good chance that there's a buck pretty close to there.
There was an epiphany you had about rubs. You asked me if I thought that it was right this year, and I thought it was a really good idea. What was it?
Was it about wispies versus big rubs or something like that?
No, I don't think so. I feel like...
I hope it's on video because I done forgot for sure.
I think it's on a podcast somewhere.
Okay.
It's probably about around the time of October when you're hunting some Texas Public probably, and I think that's when it was, and you had come across some rubs and thought that, I mean, you had a really good theory. I can't remember what it was. I would say this is kind of something you talked about.
Man, keep a hunting journal. That's what I suggest.
We got them. It's just we got to go back and listen to our podcast. If you find a bunch of rubs, and they can be little wispies, but if you find a bunch of rubs in a very small area that's in the thicket, that's a lot of times an indicator that there is a buck bedded there in some form or fashion. So, at home, that doesn't help us much, because I feel like that anytime a sound or a hogs comes through, it just relocates deer, and I hardly have ever seen this. I think this is just because we live in Mexico and Dan Infault lives in Canada pretty much. But like the Dan Infault style of there's a buck that, you know, this is a buck bed and he's in there all the time and I'm just going to go in there and set up 40 yards from his bed, and when he stands up, shoot him out of his bed right before dark. That just doesn't happen. I don't think that we have the same habitual bedding habits of bucks or deer generally. Like, you're going to have areas they bed in, but dude, there's hardly ever just like beds where you're like, oh man, that thing lays there every day. I don't ever see that in Texas. So, you know, it's something to take note of, but depending on where you are in the country, you may or may not really take much note of it. If you're up north, you find a bunch of rubs around a thicket, you might need to be setting up there, you know.
What info, hold on, that's what I just read. How to hunt an area that has a ton of rubs and no scrapes. So, kind of branching off of what we were just talking about. I think there's a decent chance that when you see this kind of stuff, it's later in the season, and you have some repetitive violators in that situation, especially them little fork-headed dudes and guys like that that just get in there and have a lot of frustrations to take out. So I would say, kind of back to the beautyberry thing, when you see that, you need to look at the whole picture and figure out where those deer actually are living. And at the same time, if you see a lot of rubs, maybe that means the deer in that area are aggressive and you can do some rattling and calling and have some success.
It's a good thought. I think back to the 2020 Illinois stuff. We found a rub line and never even hunted this spot, but found a really good rub line. And I think what you can do a lot of times is, this is a hard thing for us to do because we want to kill a deer now. We want to kill a deer today, right? But you can take that information and kill a deer with it next year a lot of times. And I think that when you see that, like KC said, sometimes when that's the case, it's mid-November on through the end of the year. It's later in the year, and you may have missed your window at that point because you're looking at sign that was made a week, 2 weeks, three weeks, or a month ago. So with that in mind, though, that is an area that you have found, and if you find it in the postseason, then you're a few months from getting to do this maybe, but go in there and hunt it during the height of the rut, because the reason there's a rub line there is because bucks travel in that direction, and a lot of times it's because they're traveling perpendicular across the grain of doe trails entering a food source or field or bedding or whatever. So it a lot of times can be, I think, a perpendicular trail that you could set up on and kill a deer in the height of the rut when the cruising and chasing is at the height.
Yeah, I think to that, I should add a note on here that's kind of general about rubs. Get to know rubs a little better. Don't just look at them and be like, that's a rub. I think that for me, paying attention to, if I can date a rub, like they have like three classifications of like, that rub is less than 24 hours old, that rub is less than 3 days old, or that rub is kind of old. Like, that means a lot to me, and I think can help you make some pretty good choices on how to treat them.
O'Reilly Auto Parts are in the business of keeping your car on the road. O'Reilly Auto Parts offer friendly, helpful service and the parts knowledge you need for all your maintenance and repairs. I don't know if you stopped in at an O'Reilly lately, but I use one because we have one right not too far from my house. People there are super helpful. I don't care if I'm getting boat batteries, car parts, whatever. Love those guys. They got thousands of parts and accessories in stock, either in-store or online, so you don't have to worry if you're in a jam. The team at O'Reilly Auto Parts can test your battery for free, in or out of your car. If it needs to be replaced, they'll help you find just the right battery for your vehicle. If you need your windshield wipers replaced, a brake light fixed, quick service, they'll help you find the right part or point you to the nearest local repair shop for help. Whether you are a car aficionado or an auto novice, you will find the employees at O'Reilly Auto Parts to be knowledgeable, helpful, and best of all, friendly. The professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts are your one-stop shop for all things do-it-yourself auto. You can find what you need in-store or online. Stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts today or visit us at O'ReillyAuto.com/meat eater. That's O'ReillyAuto.com/meat eater. There's nothing like snook hook sets at dawn or catching a tarpon in the moonlight. Find your next fishing trip made easy on fishingbooker.com and experience the magic of the Sunshine State or any other destination on your fishing bucket list. Book a blue water adventure in search of sailfish or go snapper fishing with the kids. With over 6,000 captains and trips to choose from, planning your next one just got a whole lot easier. Download the Fishing Booker app on the Google Play or App Store or visit them online at fishingbooker.com to book your trip today. You ever get that feeling you're stuck inside staring at screens and a primal urge kicks in? You crave wide open spaces, fresh air, the chance to connect with the land. Well, maybe it's time to find your own piece of the wild, but searching for property can be a maze. That's where land.com comes in. They got millions of listings across the country, from mountain ranches to hidden fishing holes. Their search tools are like a seasoned guide helping you narrow down what you want. Land.com isn't just about buying and selling. It's about finding a place to hunt, fish, explore, or simply sit by a campfire and listen to the crickets. So head over to land.com today to turn one day into today, because trust me, there's nothing quite like the feeling of standing on your own piece of earth.
A friend from Canada says, do you need different permits traveling across the country to hunt? You do. If you're unfamiliar with the system in the United States, the states manage wildlife, but there is all different types of ground, public and private, within those states. So pretty much each state has its own licensing system. And then particular properties sometimes have different permit levels and stuff like that. 2023 plans for traveling to hunt. Right now we're traveling to the hill country of Texas, and outside of that, I plan on hunting elk and whitetail this year, and I don't know. Like, it's funny how much planning I haven't done for 23 right now.
Yeah.
Do you have any more expansion on that?
I think you were planning on hunting Iowa.
Yeah, potentially.
But outside of that, I mean, I think there will be some similar stuff that we hunted, similar to this year, that we hunted this year or whatever, I guess, however you say that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't really have a lot of plans. We tend to fly by the seat of our pants a lot, according to Chris Webb. And I think he's right. So that's all I know.
Basic camera to start filming hunts. I started with Sony X100. It's a camcorder with autofocus. It's pretty nice.
I'd start with your iPhone.
Yeah.
As far as basic stuff goes, anything you can afford, the more you can afford, the better the footage is going to be. But it doesn't make it any easier to understand how to run the camera, really. So just got to get familiar with something that you can afford and buy a camera arm and go do the thing.
Yeah. I think a good camera arm is probably worth as much as a good camera. Mm-hmm. Or maybe not. Shouldn't say it that way. But don't skimp when it comes to the camera arm if you actually want something that's worth looking at.
Dude, I walked around filming trees with sun flares and leaves and deer prints, you know, tracks or whatever, like just filming stuff, learning how, you know, the aperture works with, you know, in regards to ISO settings and shutter and all that. So, I mean, if you really want to do it, you just got to go out there and work it and try to figure out how things look best, you know.
How do y'all self-film and get it done?
Because of God's providence.
That's right. In fact, we try not to do that anymore. But we got us a team together to be able to film each other and do some different things. But kind of an extension of just the filming stuff is to practice. If you want to get it done self-filming, commit to having the camera in the tree and commit to getting the shot on film. And if you do that, sooner or later, you will get it on film.
Yeah, you know, we actually talked to our buddy Chris B. about this one time. And, like, he gets them on film all the time.
Yeah.
And shoots them on, like, in the frame and everything. And I got to the point where, you know, I was like, in 2020, I was going to do a lot of hunting. And I was like, you know what? I'm just going to commit to getting as much footage as I can, commit to being, you know, telling the story well. But if the shot is not on footage, then I'm not going to ruin my chance at shooting some of these big deer I'm chasing this year. So that's where I was at. Chris is a little more just going to get it on footage if, you know, no matter what, even if it messes up a shot for him. So, you know, it just kind of depends on your goals. You want to shoot a big deer, or do you want to get a big deer on footage? So,
Yep. I think that if you want to kill less deer, you should start self-filming your hunts.
For sure.
Hang deer with hide on or off?
I was trying to think of a joke to make there, but I would say I usually hang with the hide off, but I don't have a walk-in freezer. Or on, sorry.
Yeah.
On, but I don't have a walk-in freezer. So if I had a walk-in freezer, I'd probably take the hide off and let that nice little crust get on there, you know what I mean? Get them crusty.
I like hide on, personally. I know what you're talking about for the aging purpose, but you end up saving more meat because you, if you leave the hide on.
Just got to eat the mold, dude. Ain't that big a deal.
Oh, yeah. What time of year do you do most of your scouting?
Joke's on them.
Joke's on them. We don't scout. No, we do some scouting. I would say winter scouting, postseason scouting is super, super effective.
It's also nice, man.
Yeah.
It's nice to just get out and walk around when it's sunny and 55 degrees, man.
But the trick answer to this is summer, because I would say, and this is not me trying to make sure you go buy some map app or anything like that, but this is me being honest, I do way more scouting on a map than I do in the field.
Yeah.
And I think it pays off.
But, dude, we've gotten to that point because of all the field scouting.
It's true. Make and sure you spend also, ample time in the field.
Yeah, like the hunting side of things too. But we just spent a lot of time in the woods since 2016.
Yeah.
And when we first started doing this, you know, for some reason, some of you are still listening. And I thank you so much, because it's not that we didn't have anything to offer by any means, but we've learned a lot since then.
A lot of y'all got to grow with us. And that
was
that's
cool. Right. But we also knew, like, hey, there's some things we know, and here's our experience, and here's what we think about it. Mm-hmm. It doesn't mean that that's the way it is or you have to think that way. But we also knew inside our own minds that, you know, we had some stuff to learn. So we went out and worked hard to learn it, especially in, like, when I think back to 2017 and 18, especially, man. Like, we worked really hard those summers. We would drive hours a week to get to places that we could scout new stuff and learn more about deer and hang trail cameras and figure out, you know, how we should frame the trail cameras better on trails or whatever. Mm-hmm. Like, all these different things you learn. And I just think that is stuff that set us on the right path to where now we can look at a map and go, this is what we've seen. You know, we've seen maps compared to the ground scouting, the in-person scouting, in this manner. So now we can just look at the maps and figure a lot of this out. And it does change when you get somewhere, but, you know, you can't drive 15 hours away to scout during the summer. Most people can't, and we can't most of the time either. So, you know, when it's 100 in July in Texas, we're probably watering the garden in the morning and then hopping on the maps.
Is late season calling worth a try?
I think, depending on the situation, calling is kind of always worth a try.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't put my bets on calling in a deer in the prime rut. I mean, it just
sometimes they act like they don't hear you.
Yeah,
and they just do.
They literally are just either zombie mode out, or they just ignore you because there's does right in front of them. Why would they come to
you? Turds, man. Sometimes bucks are weird, man, and. Yeah. No matter how old they are, they might not want to fight or have an encounter with a deer. You know, like, I'm not a super big, muscly guy right now, but at one point in my life I was, but that doesn't mean I wanted to fight a guy. You know what I mean? Like, so it's calling, you never know. And I do think that grunts are going to be one of your top late season things, because deer always communicate. They might not always fight.
Yeah. Calling's attractive to people more than it is deer.
Yeah. How much info from trail cameras is too much? I miss the surprise.
I understand.
Mm-hmm.
I miss it at times too, but That's kind of the beauty of traveling to hunt, is if you don't get to put a trail camera out first, then you go and you hunt and you shoot whatever makes you happy at the time. And that's super fun. It's also fun just to be in a tree when that's the goal, because you know that, you know, if your goal is like something that comes out, makes me happy, 3-year-old plus, dude, there's a lot more 3-year-old bucks in the world than there are 4 or 5s.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just like, you're just excited because you know you got a pretty good chance of pulling the trigger on that trip. So it's fun. But, you know, honestly, like, here's what things boil down to a lot of the time, man.
It's like this, man.
It's like this. If you ain't hurting somebody, then do what you want.
That's,
you
know what it. I mean? Let's go.
Like, just, why do we have to make a big publicity thing out of this trail camera thing? Like, if it ain't hurting you, then don't worry about it. And I know people are shooting your bucks. That, you know, wake up, people. The state owned the bucks, right? The state, and that'll hurt you.
That'll
hurt
your
heart, man, to know that, right?
Mm-hmm.
But you don't own the buck, so the state does, according to the state. Which by the way,
us.
Y'all elected them. So anyway, I'm just kidding. But my point is, like, these. The people are going out and maybe being more effective because of trail cameras or cell cameras or whatever. If they're having fun doing it, dang it, we're hunting and we're having fun, and you know, we're not fighting about it. So praise the Lord, man. Like, we got 12 million people that want to go hunting and are advocates for this on the political spectrum, instead of a bunch of dudes getting mad and or not killing deer because they're not very good hunters and they can't use their cell cameras because they're outlawed. And now we've only got 10 million voices out there for us. So, I mean, there's ways to spin everything, man. And I just think we should all be a little more content with what we got going on and quit worrying about everybody else.
Self-regulate.
Yeah.
That's all there is to it, man. If you don't like it, then find the way that it does work for you. I'm not criticizing this guy. He's asking.
No, nice, I don't think so either.
Sincere question.
Yeah.
Because we struggle with that too. And
I just
think
had to get on my soapbox for
a minute. Good,
not
man.
On his behalf, on somebody else.
I think that if you miss a surprise, just go on an out-of-state hunt that year. And you kind of get to do both of things.
That's right. Or just in-state on some public land you've never been on.
Yep. Oh, I missed one. Is calling more effective on unpressured deer? Absolutely.
Of course.
Yeah.
Yep. Find some unpressured deer, though.
What's the biggest buck you've ever gotten on trail camera?
This is a tough question. We actually didn't prepare much for this podcast, but that question was one we looked at. There's a...
Dude, they're out there.
Spotty McWills. So, I think there's been some big deer on camera that I've gotten over the years in Kansas. This is a kind of a cool story. When we first started running trail cameras, this was like back in the days when you had actual film, right? 24 pictures is what you got. And we would hook up this trail camera. We'd hook up or put this trail camera on this place in Kansas that we hunted 20 years ago or whatever, and had a film camera, 24 pictures. And one of the 24 pictures that we put was that took was a typical 7x7, but we couldn't really tell much about him. Like, you could just tell there was 7 points. Well, there's 7 on one side. The other side looked to be the same. But it was dark enough that, because it was an actual flash camera, you know what I mean? And it was dark enough that we couldn't really see. I don't think that deer is the biggest deer we've ever gotten on camera. I think for you and I, there was a deer in Ohio that on a Map Scout challenge that was a pretty awesome buck. He's kind of a mainframe 8, but he had like a little triple beam thing going on. He's probably a pretty high scorer. We actually got a buck on trail camera on public in Texas that they're hard to tell because they're smaller bodied, you know, but this deer is really big.
Yeah. It's hard to say, man, because we've gotten a decent amount of like the 160, 170 type deer across the country. On camera, not a bunch, you know, but there are some, and it's when you're looking at a picture, it's pretty hard to tell plus or minus 5 inches, you know. So, but I don't think we've ever had like a 190 on camera.
No, I mean we haven't. There,
I wish
I've seen a 190 on the hoof because he got shot by one of the hunters that I guided at one point. So,
thoughts on Santa?
Oh, so many things come to mind. I don't know. We celebrated Santa when I was a kid, and I loved it. It was so exciting, right?
Yeah.
I let my kids know pretty early. I don't know. I think it's a personal deal, but we personally were convicted at one point when kids were real little, and we decided to let them know because I didn't want Jesus to turn into Santa.
Yeah.
And so we let them know and said, hey, doesn't really change a whole lot. The same spirit is embodied in Christmas that we wanted to be embodied in Christmas. And, you know, you're still going to get presents. So,
yeah, we are newer parents. We got a almost 3-year-old and a little one, and we aren't going to do Santa.
Yep.
It's just not a thing. We actually aren't going to do Christmas, a lot of the Christmas tradition type stuff, but it's kind of like the trail camera thing. Do what you think's right. What cart do you use? An Amazon one. I bought it like in 2018 or something like that, and it has seen better days.
Yes, it has. It fell off going about 70 down the highway one time and took off about half the rubber off the wheel.
Best approach to hunting timberland with minimal pre-scouting.
Justin Timberland?
Yeah.
With minimal scouting?
Yeah, I would say
aerials.
Yeah, map.
Start.
Map that stuff. Look at a bunch of different aerials if you can. And it's going to be pretty monotonous, so find the other things that differentiate, whether that's creeks, creek crossings, four-wheeler trails, human trails, property boundaries, yeah, cutovers, whatever, clear cuts, private land that's around it, any of that stuff.
You can use some of the layers on Onyx for cuts, burns, those kind of things that
crops.
Can help you, crops. Also red oaks and or coniferous and deciduous trees, you know, and different types of oaks. So
there's pigs in the ditch.
Sure
Look
enough,
at that. What are y'all doing?
Comment. There's animals.
They're eating carrion, aren't they?
Nasties.
How about that?
Nasties.
That's a must be most.
They're eating a dead deer.
Yeah, pretty droughty down here right now if that's going on.
Wow.
Golly.
Weird.
Mean critters right there.
Weird
dude.
To hunt, dude.
Similar question. How do you hunt timber when everything looks the same? Find something that doesn't look the same.
Pretty much.
Not to be sarcastic, but
no, but I mean, here's the thing about timber properties is like they're typically bigger.
Yeah.
So you've got more space to find something that's that deviates a little bit.
How to levitate over crunchy leaves.
Same as the snow.
Yeah. I'd use all fours if I was you.
Use the force, you said?
Yeah. If you do have crunchy leaves, then wait until it's wet. Or maybe you go in really early.
That's,
or
yeah.
Come out really late or whatever it might be.
That's where I'm at.
I like the crunchy leaf stuff. I like hunting afternoons and stuff like that because usually there's some wind in the afternoon and you get a little more sound cover.
Yeah. I would say also just, I don't know. Yeah, you try to be there whenever the deer are not in the area. Mm-hmm. So, you know, when they're feeding early or something like that.
Best strategy for hunting open country with little to no trees. Rattle. That would be, I killed a deer this year on a place that had no trees by rattling them in, but you have to be there at the right time of year for that. And you have to use the lay of the land to your advantage on that. Because if you call at a deer and he can see where he thinks that call's coming from, he's not going to come any closer than what he can see.
Yeah.
So, outside of that, use bait. It's a good way to hunt where there's no trees. If you got a destination for him to go to, whether that's bait, ag, water, whatever it may be, that'll help.
Glass, spot and scope, use the topo to find a place where you can see the most property you can.
Yep. I think that all is good points. Best strategy for hunting open country no trees? I just asked that question. Sorry, I'm not doing a great job. Okay, last question. Here we go. What types of soft mast do you find in the Midwest?
Persimmons.
There should be some persimmons around.
Yeah.
maybe not
plum.
In the far north regions.
You got American plum up there?
There should be some Prunus americanus up there somewheres in some places. Pawpaws are, especially in the eastern Midwest, are going to be a thing, but they don't really drop at a great time of the year usually.
Apples?
Apples, I think, would be probably a number one primo, in my opinion. Crab apples, regular apples, any of that stuff.
Do you eat cherries? Those people have some cherry orchards.
Maybe. They might. If they're hungry.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What other kind of soft mast they got up here?
There's not a lot of other types of soft mast, really.
Yeah.
That's kind of about it. I mean, deer don't eat them oranges or nothing, and they don't have those in the Midwest anyway, so.
Yeah.
That's probably going to be about it. But anyways.
What was that? We had a guy on the Rut Fresh this year that talked about some sort of bush that had a berry, and I looked it up while we were on the, it was in Pennsylvania.
Was it Pennsylvania?
What was that tree? If y'all remember that. Send us a message.
Jimmy Shirey talks about the cucumber tree up there, too.
That's right. That's right.
It's a different thing than what that guy was talking about. But,
yeah.
That was Grant, I think, wasn't it?
Yeah, it might have been. It was like a – it's some sort of bush from Japan or something like that.
Yeah. So, not ideal.
No.
But, you know, if they're eating it, kill them over it, yeah. Pretty much. But, yeah, that's pretty much the extent of it. Soft mast can be cool if you can find it. Those apples are really – seem to bring the deer in. That's about all we have for questions. Mm-hmm. So thank you all for tuning in, doing these Q&A stuff. It's pretty fun to kind of recollect some things. It actually helps us to rethink some of the things that we've already done. We'll do another one of these in a couple months or something. If you have more questions or whatever, send us a message on Instagram or whatever. You can check out the Meteor website if you want to see the links to all of our stuff and what's going on there. Check out the YouTube channel as well. Some Texas hunts and all kinds of crazy stuff coming out from that. And if you haven't, get out and postseason scout, chase whatever you can right now to hunt, and remember that the season really never ends. You just get to hunt, shoot at something else. It might be foam or whatever, right? Yeah. Well, I didn't talk to Tyler about this, but I like shooting those tag events. They're pretty fun. This is no way an endorsement of Total Archery Challenge or anything. It's whatever. But we went last year. It's pretty fun. I'll probably try to go to one or two of those this year if I have time. So might be thinking about some of that stuff, guys, doing some foam shooting stuff because it's different than hunting, and it's nice to still have, like, a competitive edge that's involved with lots of targets.
Mm-hmm.
Like, hunting is competitive where you're competing against the deer, but there's usually only, like, one or two shots.
Well, unless you're on the forums and you're competing against all the other guys.
Oh, yeah, that's for sure. For sure. Oh, man, I love that. yeah, you want to talk about something that ruined hunting? It's way before truck cameras. This is the internet forum, sir.
Way before YouTube, too.
Anyways, guys, remember to be nice, and remember, this is your element.
Live in it.
Hey, everybody, listen up. I got mega huge news. Meat Eater Live is heading back out on the road. That's right. Join me and the crew. Clay Newcomb, Cal, Yanni, Spencer's going to be there. Phil the Engineer is going to be there. Meat Eater Live, headed back out. Now, when you get every ticket, okay, every ticket you buy, you get a signed copy of our new Meat Eater Outdoor Cookbook. This tour is celebrating the release of the book. Buy a ticket, get a signed copy, Meat Eater Outdoor Cookbook, wild game recipes for the grill, smoker, camp stove, and campfire, which I'll point out is a $38 value. Here's where we're going to go. April 23rd, the Mesa Arts Center in Mesa, Arizona. April 24th, the Balboa Theater in San Diego. April 25th, the Grove in Anaheim, California. April 27th, the Crest Theater in Sacramento. April 29, the Union in Salt Lake City. April 30, the Egyptian in Boise. May 1, the Wilma Theater in Missoula. May 2, the Bing Crosby Theater in Spokane, Washington. May 4, Revolution Hall in Portland, Oregon. And May 5, the last day of the tour, Pantages Theater in Tacoma, Washington. For tickets and more information, visit the events page at the Meat Eater.com. Hope to see you at the show.